lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic of Podcast.
T Shavs.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Back again?
Yes. Yeah, like, very exciting race last night.
Yep.
We daring to dream yet, you reckon?
Yeah, we're not. I don't know. Yeah, I was telling you this morning, and you had an opposite opinion of me or thoughts of me. I was watching the race thinking, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. It's just going to be 1-2 McLaren. And normally I think something's going to happen. Then bang. As soon as I don't think that, McLaren, Lando Norris's car blows up.
Well, I mean, there was a few incidents, wasn't there? I mean, Hamilton, I'm going to say uncharacteristic, having an accident, but he's making some strange mistakes at the moment. And then you had, obviously, the incident with Charles and Antonelli. We'll talk about that because there's a very different opinion on that. And also Sainz and Lawson, which was a strange incident. And again, lots of different opinion on that one. So it's interesting going in and going on the F1 Facebook pages. And God, sometimes, and I said this to you today, sometimes you're looking at the race and you think one thing and then the opinions are totally different.
Yeah, it is, you're 100% right. Like, it's good though. It's good to have contrasting opinions and all that. And that's what sport's so good for at the same time. I've noticed with Formula One how, I guess it's any sport, how toxic some of the comments are.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, I was going through Oscar Piastri's comments and there's like girls like, you only post when you win, and then like just like going on a rant about it. I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
like,
there's some crazies
relax.
Out there. There's some crazies out there. But man, he has one hand on that championship. I know it's 34 points.
34.
I know it's a long way to go. We've still got 9 races of the season to go, but you can put pencil in a 1-2 finish. I mean, you've got some hard races coming up. I mean, you've got Singapore, you've got Azerbaijan, Brazil. Like, there's some tough races coming up, but 34 points at this stage of the year.
I don't know. I'm not as confident as you.
Don't know. He's just so ice cold. There's no chance of him just blowing up and mentally blowing up, is there? I mean, that's the difference with him with all these other drivers of the past. I mean, I remember Weber in 2010, and it was a similar stage of the season. It was him against Alonso. And then Vettel obviously came from the clouds to win the championship. But for me, they were saying back then, you know, one hand on the championship. But then, man, mentally, it's a different game. There's no one like him in the history of in F1, especially in Australian, to be this calm, cool, and collective with all this chaos happening around him. I mean, it is, yeah.
He is ice cold, but I guess with Lando, to stick up for him for a second, it was not his fault at all.
Definitely not. No.
You know, that was just purely a very, very, very unlucky.
And yeah, I mean, the McLarens have just been bulletproof, haven't they, for so long?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they said Lando hasn't had an engine failure, a failure of the car in like 5 years of him being on that team. So yeah, it was interesting that, you know, smoke billowed the cockpit and he goes, there's something wrong here. And
it's a throwback to the old West McLarens when they used to blow.
Every second race they were.
Yeah.
Every second race. So yeah, interesting. Yeah, very, very interesting. And it's on to Monza this weekend. I mean, Ferrari's homeland. So hopefully they can bounce back. But you guys might notice we're in a new studio.
Yeah. Very white still, but we'll make it work.
Yeah. We've got some finishing touches to...
We're work in progress.
Work in progress, but we had to chuck this together and get the pot out for you guys. So.
Yeah. No, it's all happening, mate.
Yeah, it's exciting.
All new Republic of headquarters.
It is. Yes, it is. And we want to thank the love and support from you guys with YouTube and Instagram, and like and subscribe. It makes a huge difference. And obviously, we've got our weekly Patreon show, which we do post this for extra chats.
Straight after.
Some more controversial looks at things and those sort of things. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good,
mate. Jump on board.
Head over to motorheaven.com.au and bikeheaven.com.au for all your motorcycle and bicycle needs. The bros over there are good guys. Aussie company, whatever you need, if you ride push bikes, mountain bikes, cycling, motorbikes, road, dirt, they got it all. They're the best. Best in the business by far.
All right, let's get into it. So, Oscar Piastri, first place. Go, you good thing. Max Verstappen, second. Isaac Hadjar, third. We haven't even spoken about that yet. George Russell, fourth. Alex Albon, fifth. Ollie Bearman from the pit lane, sixth.
Yeah.
Lance Stroll, seventh. Fernando Alonso, eighth. Yuki Tsunoda, ninth. And Esteban Ocon, tenth. So, yeah, the glaring omissions to that is obviously both your Ferraris, double DNF. Hamilton, strange
move.
Yeah,
what happened with him?
Just lost the rear end and then...
Ran wide.
Ran wide, got onto the... there was like that painted asphalt, and then obviously it was just trickling rain for sort of that temp after the 10th lap. I mean, they were just cock teasing us with the rain the whole race. But
it was 8 minutes out, like for about 30 minutes.
But yeah, for me, it was just a silly mistake from him, and another sort of red line through his name at the moment without sounding too harsh. I mean, you never see that from Lewis Hamilton.
I was going to say, you never see it.
I mean, him running wide into and hitting the barrier, and then, you know, he's talking post-race in the media huddle, and he's like, it is what it is, you know. I don't know how you read into that, but I don't know. It's just a strange, strange world that Ferrari place at the moment. You looked at Leclerc getting hit by Antonelli, and the first thing Leclerc did was jump on the radio. Shouldn't have pitted. Nothing to do with Antonelli running into him. We shouldn't have pitted. Straight back to the team. Negative. Just not a nice place to be.
It's a bit of a virus in there. But even afterwards in the like post-race media scrums and everything, he was talking like, you know, it was an aggressive move, but I also did an aggressive move. He wasn't like that pissed off.
God, I was just looking back at it. That Antonelli just completely misjudged that.
Yeah.
Completely. And a rookie move, you know. He's been showing some light signs this year, but there's still some of that those rookie mentality things that he does. But you got to look at the history of the sport, and you know, I mean, even Verstappen back when he first started, I mean, he was rough around the edges in that first year, especially with Toro Rosso back then or whatever it was. So, and then obviously came to Red Bull and won his first race. But yeah, there's still some little things that he's got to work on.
Yeah, yeah. But that's rookie stuff. Like, no matter really what sport it is, there's always going to be mistakes. It's his first year, for Christ's sake. Like, there's always going to be something.
Yeah,
you just can't have it week in, week out. But he still showed promise.
Now, one of the strange incidents of that race was Sainz and Lawson.
Yeah.
And looking back at the video footage today, I just can't believe that he's got a 10-second penalty for that.
I know.
For me, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, racing incident of all racing incidents, they're both at fault there. I mean, you got to leave the driver space. Yes, he's going around the outside, but, you know, just didn't get it. Did not get it.
Carlos Sainz definitely didn't get it either. Like, but as you said, like, it's a pretty polarizing decision because a lot of people are either side.
Yeah. Yep.
Which I don't get. I agree with you completely. I mean, I don't get how that is a penalty.
Oh, I don't. And like Lawson going around that turn, it looked like he lost the rear slightly mid-corner and then sort of drifted out wide and then they made contact. But that's a racing incident. Yeah. Like, are they allowed to even go wheel-to-wheel anymore without penalties? Like, for me, it didn't make sense. And they both got punches, both went to the back of the grid, both wrecked their races and leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And that's the problem with that wheel-to-wheel racing, as you want to call it, soon as someone's... Even if there's not an incident, they're all on the radio complaining anyway. Mm. And then soon as there's one little touch where it should just be a racing incident, like, you just got to move on. But yeah. I get it. Like, everything's televised. We've had this conversation before. But, geez, like, sometimes you just got to put your big boy pants on.
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of watching an AFL match and they're just... The umpires are just getting way too involved.
Yeah.
Like, just let them play.
Yeah, let them race.
Let them race.
Like, they are the best in the world.
Yeah.
You know, they can find the millimeter gaps or whatever it is that they need to do. There's always going to be mistakes. Not everyone's perfect.
Yeah, for me, it was a strange one and disappointing. Now, again, different views from different tools, you know.
So many.
It's, you know, a lot of people today were, Sainz fully blamed, deserved the penalty. And I like to see things on from what I reckon when I first watched Formula One for 25 years of my life, and that's all I know. My number one motorsport, you know, always growing up was watching F1. And everyone's going to have different views. But for me, straight ahead, racing incident. And it always should be and always has been that.
Is it me or is it very rare for someone going around the outside to get a penalty? It's normally the rider or driver on the inside that pushes someone wide or takes them out, whatever, that gets the penalty. I can't think of anyone going around the outside getting a penalty.
No.
Unless you like really try and close a door in on someone. But like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just for me, I don't want to keep saying the same thing, but just for me, it did not make sense. So.
Yeah.
And I mean, they both had their races wrecked. And 10-second penalty for signs would have meant nothing anyway.
That's right.
So, yeah, very, very strange decision. And all we can ask for is consistency. So, I mean, if it happens again, I mean, it's a penalty. But
yeah, consistency. That's right. Going back to Ferrari real quick, how do you see their rest of the season play out and going into the future? Because everyone's a bit miffed by them.
Look, for me, it's their most important week of the year. And we all know that a win for Ferrari at Monza is like a championship for other teams. Like, it is so important. Now, have they made that a priority the last few weekends and really concentrated on a low downforce setup? Who knows? There is some talk of that they're going to come out with something really, really good.
That's pretty wild to then just like can like two races.
Italians, bro. We know. It's hyperfixation. It's crazy. So for me, it's, it should be an amazing weekend. It's just so unfortunate for them that they're coming off a double DNF. I mean, it was not any worst possible way to go into that weekend unless it was like they collided together. But
and Hamilton's got a 5-place grid penalty.
He does. He was speeding to the grid.
Yeah.
So obviously, because the nature of the track and that hairpin before the front straight, double wave yellows means slow to, you know, prepare to stop.
Yeah.
And he was flying through there from all reports and, you know, copped the penalty, which the rules are rules, I
suppose. Unusual, again, from him. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I've gone on record to say it many times. Like, I think he is mentally done. And he's also got a lot of things in his life that are going on. He's got businesses and, you know, fashion icon, whatever you like to call him. I mean, he's got all these other things that he, I'm sure he prioritizes. Maybe racing's done for him.
So you got the new regs next year.
You do.
I guess his last Hail Mary is Ferrari absolutely nail these regs.
Yes.
And he's got a shot at going up against Charles.
Yes. But, I mean, he's shown nowhere near Charles' pace.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So for me, what does he really want to have the best car next year and then finish second to Charles? I mean, I think that would be probably even worse for him, you know, knowing the ego of the man.
Oh, yeah. If you won, how many titles has he won?
Seven.
Seven.
Seven's always the thing, James. If people get to seven, it's always a bit, you know, something always happens. So there's a lot of people that have finished at seven in their careers. A lot of people.
Marquez is getting his seventh Grand Prix, MotoGP world title.
Yes, yes. And then you've got, you know, obviously Schumacher 7, Hamilton 7. 7 seems to be the number.
Rossi
7. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't want to sound negative to our Hamilton fans out there, but I just don't see any positive for the next year and a half for him.
Do you know what I loved on the first lap? How ballsy Verstappen was.
Yeah.
That was wild. Yeah. Like, the whole car snapped, kept it, ran wide, still kept it. Amazing.
Yeah. It was great to see because it was unusual going through that section because offline, obviously it's on like sand dunes there. So it's just so sandy off the line.
Mm.
And then you saw the sand sort of billow up and him getting sideways. And then how cool is that, you know, banked hairpin there. And the other one was back to Charles. His pass on Russell just went for it. I mean, there's no way he'd try that pass, you know.
I know. Half his car was on the gravel as it was.
And went off the road and didn't get a penalty, which was strange as well. But
I know. None of it makes any sense.
Four tires off the white line, but, you know, and then crashed into Russell's car, damaged him. But nah, that's fine. It doesn't make sense.
There's no consistency. Maybe that could be the episode of this.
But, it was good there was no penalty because you want to see them race. Yeah. But then they go and give signs a penalty. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. There's no consistency. But like that's what you want to see. You want to see good, hard racing. And even if a couple of wheels are going to go onto the dirt, geez, so be it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was like similar to like Rossi and Stoner on the corkscrew up at Laguna Seca. You know, like that vibe going off and passing and colliding, whatever. So it was
you got to push the limits.
Yeah.
That's what these drivers are built to do is to push the limits on whatever they're doing.
Mm.
You know. Our boy Hadjar, third.
Amazing.
Who would have saw that coming?
Yeah, and I said last night I had a very strange sleep schedule. I went a bit too hard Sunday, the bottomless brunch.
How many drinks do you have?
I've lost count. I couldn't tell you. And then the waitress is saying, like, Tom, you know, we've got 10 minutes left. I'm like, fucking bring the whole thing. You know, bring it here.
Bring the whole tray.
Yeah. And then...
big dog dogging.
Got a bit carried away. And then anyway, carked at about 8 o'clock. Woke up 11:30. Okay. So I've got 3 hours sleep. Watched the race. I'm like, oh, I'm not even that tired. I feel weird. It feels like it's the morning for me. Then I watched the podium celebration, which I rarely do for Formula One because, you know, it's 1:30 in the morning at that time usually. And you're like, oh, finally, let's get to bed. And it was just so good to see him on the podium. He's so, you know, he's such a unusual guys, and he's got a different personality again, similar to, you know, Piastri. But you just want the best for him. I mean, the first race of the year, Australia, he crashes on the formation lap and doesn't complete a lap. And there's that famous him crying with his helmet on through the pits. And now he's gone from that rock bottom to a podium with that car. I mean, he'll be on it. He'll be in a Red Bull seat next year, no doubt in my mind now.
T-Shavs, mate, we all know that you're a Mr. Aprilia. You love riding. I want to know, where do you get your motorcycle gear from?
Mate, there is only one place I get all my gear from, apart from the guy down the street, and that's Motor Heaven in Moorabbin. Okay, they are a family-owned business, which we love. They always have the best prices, and if I want to get something shipped to my house, it's free delivery over $150. So for me, it's really a no-brainer.
Right, so you get all the best gear, and then is it better than going to the dumb big corporate chains?
They don't care about you. No. You know, you can't call the owner of them to ask questions.
No.
Adrian's always on my phone list, and I can always call him to
He's always calling you.
He is, definitely.
Yeah, no, I love it. So head to motorheaven.com.au where you never pay full price. They got all the big brands, super fast dispatch, ship anywhere around Australia. You can get whatever you want.
It's a no-brainer.
No-brainer. How funny is all the memes coming out about that, though?
Yeah, I know. Should just stay. Just stay there.
That's what everyone's saying. Yeah. Like, just stay.
But the new rules, hopefully, Red Bull can't let this happen again. I mean, they can't let their little sister team have a faster car. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. Red Bull have just gone the completely wrong route with their upgrades. That's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And we said this 2 years ago. Once the design team changes, they've just gone a wrong direction.
Mm.
You know, so...
What would it look like if Max Verstappen was driving that car right now?
Oh, look, he'd be a podium contender. What he's doing at the moment with that car, James, is ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I know.
You know, he's 2 to 3 tenths off the pole position time in that car. I mean, we just cannot sleep on how amazing this guy is. He is the most talented driver by far in that grid at the moment.
Yeah, I think everyone can agree with that.
So for him and the racing nouns and the, you know, all these things, he's gone, he's trying stuff. He put the soft tire on, then he put the medium on, he's trying stuff because he goes, I haven't got the fastest car, but let's try, you know? I'm not going to let anyone pass. No one's passing me.
Yeah,
I know. The confidence of just going, I'll put the medium on. No one else in the top 15 had the medium on. I'll put it on. I'll give it a go. Don't you love that?
Yeah.
You know, he could just put on the card, finish third, boring race, but at least you tried something. I mean, that's why you got to love him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And he's got that ego and that C-U-N-T about him where, as you said, no, like, good luck trying to pass me because you're either going to get ran off the road. Yeah. Like, this is how it is. And he just knows how to play the game.
And we nailed that a few weeks ago when we said that people, you know, you're coming up behind Max or Max is behind you. You're already nervous because you're expecting something. You know you're not getting passed, or you know it's going to be very hard. I mean, how many times in our lives have we seen someone actually pass, you know, pass Verstappen? It's very rare.
Very rare.
Very rare. So he's either running off or, you know, he's brake checking Hamilton in Azerbaijan or, you know, something like that. But it's one of the hardest things in motorsport is to get past him. So.
Yeah. And that's fair enough. That's why he wins championships.
Yeah.
And like we spoke about it only last week or 2 weeks ago, as you said, even Marco Bezzecchi after Hungary said he read his pit board and Marc Marquez 0.8 and he said his stomach sunk. It's exactly what we were saying. It's
crazy.
Like, it's just those two have just that mindset.
Yeah. It's incredible. It is incredible.
It is good to see him actually trying. But talk to me about this. If you're Max Verstappen and you know you don't have the best car, but you know you're the best driver, which he clearly knows that. It's proven.
Yep.
How would you be feeling knowing that you can't win?
It's tough on his ego. And you got to remember...
It doesn't look like it's showing, though.
But you got to remember, halfway through last year... So I'm only talking a year ago.
Yeah.
Red Bull were on a winning streak of all winning streaks. They won nearly every race in 23... dominating the first half of 24. People are thinking, when's this guy going to lose? Remember, we were thinking that. Like, we're like, this guy's not going to lose. And then they crawled it back, went the wrong direction with their upgrades. And then it's just fallen apart after that. I mean, it is incredible.
Christian Horner's now gone.
Christian Horner's gone. And
they're wild. But like, it is wild. I just want to know what his mentality is like, because it must be a hard pill to swallow when you just don't have the tools underneath you to do the job. Can do it. But when I like watch him on the podium after qualifying or, you know, interviews, it just kind of maybe he's just so ice cold like that, but it just doesn't look like it affects him. Yeah. I'm sure behind closed doors it does, and it pisses him off. But
I know what you're saying.
I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem like it's really irking him.
No. I think when it first started happening last year, when faults started to appear second half of the year, you could tell he was sort of frustrated in the media, frustrated, and then all the stuff with Christian Horner was going on. But I think he's just resided to the fact that, look, I've had the dominant car for many years. I don't now. Thank God we've got a whole new rule change next year. He'll probably do 1 year Red Bull, see where the car is, and then he'll go, who's writing me a check? Where am I going? I want to go to the best team. Who's got the best car?
Well, you're going to know after a year, aren't you?
Exactly. So for
him, actually is in a hot seat to a degree.
And for me, it's, again, I think Mercedes have, you know, our short memories are always up front, but yeah, they seem like they're going to be nailing these regs. So
you've said it for a while now.
Yeah. They're talking 400 kilometer top speeds for these new engines once they get up and running.
I thought they were trying to make these cars safer and slower.
Slower in the corners, but fast on the straights. Fast on the straight. So that's what they've come out and said in the middle of the week, and they're like, yeah, on the initial tests, when this engine does get developed over the next couple of years, it's going to be the fastest cars ever.
That's so cool. Monza will be exciting then.
Bloody oath.
Monza will be really exciting.
Yeah. But yeah, back to Bierman. I mean, for me, you're in arguably one of the slowest cars on the grid. You're starting from the pit lane. So you've already got like a 15-second, not a head start out the back.
Disadvantage.
And you finish sixth. I mean... Yeah. You know, Haas played that perfectly. They just left the cars out there, waited for the incident to happen. Everyone came into the pits, finally changed the tyres, because it was so hard to pass. I mean, you had a look at Tsunoda. Tsunoda had brand new tyres. Bierman was in front of him with 39 lap old tyres, and he still couldn't get past him. Mm. I mean, that's how hard it is to pass in that track. So
it really just, and I was thinking about this when I was watching, it really looks like modern day Formula One is built for these, like, Abu Dhabi purpose-built kind of street circuits now. Mm. Like, they have completely outgrown your traditional... Like, you look at Zandvoort, it looks like a traditional... It's got a big, grassy, gross hill on it. Yep. Like, it looks like a traditional circuit. Mm. But they've completely outgrown all those tracks, unfortunately.
It's amazing, Zandvoort, because they've just... Like, obviously, 5 years ago, they fully renovated it, made the new banked corners and... not renovated, what's the word? Changed everything. And then next year's their last year. You know, it's gone. It's off the calendar for who knows how long. Yeah. So... To compete with these Saudi Arabias of the world and all these, you know, Middle Eastern countries. I was talking about Sepang to you a couple of weeks ago. Same thing. Sepang, the circuit organizers come out and say it's just too expensive. We can't afford to have a Formula One race here. We can fill it out, but how much do you have to charge for the tickets?
Yeah.
You know, there's no guarantee you're gonna sell it and make money. So yeah, it's interesting,
if anyone was gonna sell it though, Formula One would.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, it must be an astronomical amount of money to. I mean, you look at Saudi Arabia, they're going to have two tracks, you know, in the year. No, not James, hardly any country in the history of Formula 1 have had two races at the same country. It doesn't happen. Like, it doesn't happen. Happens in MotoGP with Spain and, you know, you got four tracks, five tracks sometimes. America is probably the only thing with the F1s lately because, I mean, it's 300 million people, I suppose, isn't there?
American company running it.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, there's only one Spanish F1. There's only one Italian or two Italian. Well, one Italian this year, no Imola. So next year. So for me, it's very rare to have two. And you're going to have two in Saudi Arabia? Two?
But it just seems like, I don't know, like the racing, I don't want to admit this, but it seems like the racing is built just for those purpose-built long straight tracks.
Well, you look at the modern day street circuit, like your Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
It's all just straights.
Yeah.
And it has to be like that to make it exciting.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Zandvoorts or, like, obviously Monaco, we all know that. But, like, even Spa, like, Barcelona, all these tracks, like, there's the race, it's predictable. The racing isn't good at all.
No, yeah, right.
Silverstone's different. Silverstone still has good racing.
Yeah, it's the second longest track on the calendar, isn't it? That's why. It's just such a long straight. So, I mean, you look at Las Vegas, it's got a 2 kilometer straight. And I love that track. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's one of those polarizing weekends. You either love it or hate it. It's on, this year it's going to be Sunday at 1 p.m. Like, how perfect is that for us in Australia? Like, Sunday 1 p.m., beers, babes, barbecues. What else you want, eh?
Yeah, nah, not much else. Lube me up. Lube me up. I don't know. Like, I just think, as much as I hate to admit it, we're going to these traditional tracks and the racing is just not up to standard. Nah. Where, you know, you go, you watch Abu Dhabi or, you know, Vegas has been exciting or whatever. Those long straights where everyone can pass, it's the only answer to fix the racing at the moment.
And for me, I love seeing them under lights. And I think all those tracks we talk about, all those new tracks are all under lights. I mean, that's the new, you know, Hollywood Formula One that is. And, you know, obviously the traditionalis, you know, don't like that.
And we're traditional.
We are. But I'm happy with that kind of change. I love seeing wealth, you know. I love wealth, James.
And you are, what you love is like a fat Russian oligarch.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Fat gold chain.
Oh, yeah. Gold chain, tan, you know. Yeah,
Veneers,
big yachts. And that's, for me, that's Formula One. And I love that. And that's where MotoGP has to stand and be like, we're more grassroots. And, you know, they can't be like that. I think, who knows the direction of Formula One? I mean, it's interesting. Zandvoort wasn't sold out.
Really?
Is that because Max isn't winning? Jesus. So,
but like Formula One, it will be interesting in 10 to 15 years. I'm going to say less than 10, that there's only going to be a handful at most of traditional tracks left.
Mm.
A handful. Like I think your Monaco and maybe like a Spa, and that could be it. That really could be it. I think everything else is going to be under lights. It's going to be this massive Formula One motorsport show.
It's just a rolling circus around all these rich places, you know. That's what it's going to be.
But it'll be interesting as well. Like, can Formula One keep it up?
Yeah, that's
you know, the people move on as well with all these fads, and who knows? Maybe it'll just be an institution, and that's what everyone follows. And like, I went for, you know, did like a half marathon, very hungover on the weekend. But when I did that, I saw 4 McLaren t-shirts and hats. Of people running.
It's amazing.
Like, it's crazy.
The most unbelievable thing is we have an Australian who's leading this championship with 9 races left and he's 34 points ahead. I mean, that's, you know, it's amazing. And it's probably, like, if I'm just trying to think, when I was 18, in 2010, when Webber was leading the championship, no one even knew what the fuck was going on back then.
No one knew.
And now it's like, you know, I like my in-laws watched F1 everywhere. My sister-in-law watches F1. Like, these people didn't even know what this sport was 5 years ago.
Bro, I'm at my, every Sunday night, I'm at my missus' family place and they're watching F1 and F2 and F3.
Wild.
Crazy.
Wild. Back to the race. This is going to be a theme all year. Such close qualifying sessions.
Yeah.
You have to admit that if Lando was up, I mean, his engine blew. But if Lando got pole, he would have won that race.
Of course.
So for me, 0.012 of a second in qualifying, that would split those two. When Lando was leading the whole weekend, practice one, practice two, practice three, he looked, and then, you know, pulled it out of the bag. I think I even posted, said pulled it out of the bag because he did. He wasn't fastest through practice. And then qualifies up front, has clean air a whole race, wins it.
Oh, I was watching qualifying, I knew whoever was getting pole was that. We were watching the winner of that race.
Yeah,
we really were. How's Lance Stroll just destroying that Aston Martin a few times, and then just like rookie mistake goes out in the grass, and then just loses the rear end and has a big shunt. But Jesus, I felt sorry for his team. They had to rebuild that car 2 or 3 times that weekend.
Isn't it interesting when the camera expands to the team and they're like, oh, for fuck's sake, I've just spent.
They would have worked all night.
All night, missed, you know, hardly any sleep. And then you've gone out and put just a dumb error.
Yeah.
And lucky there wasn't a huge amount of more damage. I know, but he, you know what? He did, he backed it up. He backed it up in the race too.
He got points, yeah?
He did. He got finished 7th. He finished ahead of Alonso. And he got lucky at the right time. Pitted early, fresh tyres.
That's half your luck.
Yeah. So,
but like, geez, you took the words out of my mouth. Like, as soon as they panned to you could just see the team going, fuck. Fuck's sake, man. Yeah. Like, you know, demoralizing. But, as you said, he backed it up. But it was just a couple of big crashes, like, Jesus. And he was getting ran through the coals on social media after that.
Going back to your point about money and F1, it was, you know, reported the other day that I think Lawrence Stroll bought Aston Martin F1 team for like $117 million or something.
Some change.
You know, and now it's worth $2.8 billion. You know, he bought it in 2018. Talk about investing in something.
Bro, you know what I'm about to say.
I know. MotoGP.
Yeah.
I know. It's the same thing. It's incredible. I mean, You guys have to understand the difference between a million and a billion is
so
like
much.
So much. Like
it's like almost unfathomable.
Yeah,
how much
it doesn't
it is.
Make like people think, oh, is it like 10? No, it's not. It's fucking heaps. Like to be worth $2.8 billion, the whole of Formula One wasn't worth $2.8 billion back then. Now one team is.
Yeah.
I mean it's
and crazy. Not even a full factory, like it's a you know, factory. Yeah. I mean, it ain't McLaren or Ferrari or Mercedes.
Yeah. So McLaren, I mean, they've got their title sponsor for next year, which is going to be MasterCard. So they're going to be called the MasterCard McLaren, whatever it is. $100 million for 1 year. I mean, no wonder they're not going down to Phillip Island and being in the back of those pits, bro. They're going to be fucking state of the art. They're $100 million a year, you know, for one sponsor. 100 mil. It's the biggest sponsorship deal in Formula One history, you know. $100 million for 1 year. I mean, unbelievable.
But you know what's crazy? I want to speak to someone. Maybe we need to get MotoGP finance guy back on. I want to know that $100 million, how much of that, do you make money off that? Like, are you selling MasterCards or what? However it works? But like, just say, you know, I don't know, what's an obscure, just say Sony. Sony spends $100 million on a Ferrari or Mercedes.
Mm.
Are they making money from that $100 million? Because I see it, but does that make me want to buy Sony? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. It's
like Lenovo Ducati. It's not going to make me buy a Lenovo laptop.
Yeah, but hang on a second. If you're at the shops, okay, and you see a Lenovo, in your head you think quality already because they're sponsoring the factory Ducati.
I don't think that.
I'm sure a lot of people do. I think a lot of people will go, that's it. Oh, yeah, I'll get one of those.
So you would buy, I know you'd already buy Sony, but like,
yep.
Is that going to persuade you because they sponsor Ferrari?
What's a strange thing about MasterCard, for instance, you don't go out and buy a MasterCard.
No.
You go through your bank who have a MasterCard, credit card, or like you don't go, I'm a part of a MasterCard. It's not a thing.
Nah.
You can't go buy a MasterCard, like you can't go, I'm gonna buy it off the shelf. It's part of the bank who then use MasterCard or they use Visa.
Yeah, yeah.
So it could even be like they spend $100 million. They probably get unbelievable corporate access.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they get to invite all their big honcho bank people to these events to showcase, we're the major sponsor. And then they get that on board.
And then they get deals.
Correct. So that's where it would come from as well.
And that have to be a part of it. It's a great take. Mm. Great take. Is it because just return on investment on your average Joe, finance podcast, Finance Republica, your return of investment on your average Joe just buying whatever because it sponsors a Formula One team. Just for me, I just don't see where you're recouping that money. No. I really don't. Like,
well, it's like Williams is called Atalanis Williams, which is actually an Australian guy who owns that brand. I don't know what the hell they do. And the other thing with Formula One, you don't say, the Atalanis Williams has just gone up the inside of the, you know, MasterCard. You just say McLaren or you just say that. There's no, like, I think in maybe MotoGP they use like Repsol Honda, or they use Lenovo Ducati just a little bit more as well.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you don't hear Lenovo Ducati.
You don't.
But Repsol Honda,
was like. But then I remember looking up Sterile Garda, and I was like, "What's Sterile Garda?" And they sponsor Aprilia now. It's Italian milk.
Yeah.
But if I went to Italy and I saw Sterile Garda, I'd be like, I'm buying that.
Yes.
Or like San Carlo chips. Yeah. It was on Simoncelli's bike.
And the beer as well. I mean,
like the beers, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing I would buy when I'm there is Australia Galicia.
Yeah.
Australia Galicia, I call
Australia
it.
Australia Galicia.
So, yeah. It's marketing, I think. And marketing is interesting because it's like it goes into the back of your mind. You might not
subconsciously.
Like, and you come across it, you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, Lenovo. They make good laptops, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, maybe it's just, I don't know. I want to speak to someone about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's ego involved as well. I mean, I'm the major sponsor of an F1 team, you know. Like,
I think as you said, like corporate passes, you know, doing deals, like okay, we can get you here in Vegas, and we'll show you around for a week.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to meet Lando Norris?
I mean,
no
the
worries.
Guys, there's money can't buy experiences.
Yeah.
And that's what they'd be offering, you know.
Yeah.
I'll get the guy from Bank of America. You come. We'll meet you at Vegas. I'll put you up for the whole weekend.
And I bet you as well. you know, that $100 million, they probably only have to do like three deals, big deals, or maybe they do $100 million deals and
yeah,
you've already getting your money back. Maybe it's probably chump change for them anyway.
James, you went in just with a question then, and then we've just talked about it, and now it's answered. That's Republica effect right
that's
there.
That's wild. That is wild.
And then for me, I just thought this was an interesting take for me that Antonelli got a 10-second penalty for booting off Leclerc.
The same penalty as Sainz, yeah.
Yeah, that was a strange one for me.
No consistency, man. No. There's no consistency in this sport.
And Russell and Antonelli have been confirmed for 2026. So yeah, that's pretty much, it's looking like the set feels pretty set. And obviously we haven't announced this yet. I mean, Cadillac, yes, signed Perez and Bottas, yeah, which is fantastic. I think it's a great thing for them. Two experienced guys. I think it's smart. They're going to come in. They'll probably be the slowest on the grid. But for me to have two experienced guys who've been in F1 for years and years and years to develop the car,
and
super smart.
Marketable personalities, especially with Bottas.
Well, exactly right. And that's the other thing. It's not, yes, it's winning on Sunday, but it's also building the brand. And yep, and having those two guys who, Bottas is very marketable.
100%.
We can start selling our air fresheners again. Yep. So I'm stoked about that because he's back in the yep, back in the big leads. Perez also brings sponsor money as well, big Mexican sponsorship money. So it's a smart move for them. Yeah, they could have signed a rookie American, but maybe that's something coming up in the next couple of years.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. But we've had too many tokens across our sports anyway. So
true.
I think it's great. I think it's two perfect signings. And I think Bottas and Perez, like, you know, you want to, I guess, they already captured the fucking American market. But like, yeah, Bottas is who you want to be your poster boy. It's like when you start a small, like there's a sports team or like just say the Saudi Arabian team, they pay Ronaldo massive money. Like he's too good for that league, but they're going to put eyeballs on that club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're going to put eyeballs on that team because of that person.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yep, you know, the time will come where maybe they're fast. Does that Cadillac team, can they develop or take any data or anything out of the endurance team? Or is it just completely separate?
Oh, it's a great point. I mean, the cars are completely different. I think what they've done the last couple of weekends is they've actually got all their team together and then simulated the race. So they've got in their home base, they've got five people on the pit wall. Someone's playing like the game on their PlayStation or their sim at the same time the race is going on. And then while he's on the sim, there's a safety car. Oh, what do we do next? You know, so they're doing that sort of simulator work. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money investing, isn't it? And then building a whole brand new car, a new facility. They're not fucking around, that's for sure.
I don't know. It's hard to make money in motorsport anyway. But yeah, to have two experienced drivers, I think, exactly what you need.
Yeah.
So they know what's going on race day.
Yeah, I think it's a great ploy shot. And for me, a dead giveaway was Bottas a few weekends ago. He had that video he posted and it was him in the Cadillac going, oh, this is a nice seat, and rubbing the seat. Like, I mean,
he's good like that. He's perfect.
Yeah. And dating the Aussie, so, you know, we've got a little bit of a soft spot for him. Soft spot.
Yeah, he's basically Aussie. That's it, F1. What else you got?
No, that's it. Thank you. I've heard rumors. Yeah? I've heard rumors that Listy's List is coming back this week.
Mate, Listy's List is coming back, and Listy's actually in New Zealand at the moment.
What's he doing there?
He's gone snowboarding.
For a man that has no money, he seems to bloody travel the world.
Yeah, he can't even buy chewies.
I know, or coffees. Bloody hell. Unbelievable.
We've been slack on Listy's List, but
I've had a bit going on.
We've had a lot going on.
Yeah.
This week, I've actually heard a lot of good feedback. People are loving Listy's List. It's amazing. This week is the best corners on the MotoGP calendar.
Great shout. Love this.
Yeah. So we've got a top five. It is very, very difficult to pick, but I really had to kind of think about this one because there's a lot to pick from. So, number five, T-Shavs. Turn 11, Sachsenring, the waterfall.
Yes, great, great, great corner.
Yeah.
And what makes that corner so special, I'm sure you're going to explain shortly, is the fact that tyre is so cold.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
You know, they haven't been on that right side of tyre since turn one. Unbelievable.
Just about, yeah, that's right. Like, so it's a whole lot of lefts, fast lefts, and then to go onto that right. And like, we've seen massive incidents in the past where that right side's cold or they snap the rear as well when it comes off. But just a very fast, and you're going to kind of see this if all the answers, they're all pretty fast flowing corners, but they're all corners that take a lot of balls and That's, you know, no different. And when someone passes there, like, you know someone's passed there.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not that often. That's a good one. Waterfall. Number four is Maggots. Now, this is like a sequence of corners, but Maggots and Beckett's.
Yeah, Silverstone classic.
Yeah, classic. There's, again, fast, Silverstone's windy. Just, again, it's just takes a lot of balls to go through there. It's all about... And then, like, those corners is amazing to watch, but as you say, it must be so hard to get right.
I mean, that track, I mean, it's a 2-minute lap. I mean, yeah. That's... They're always going to leave something out there. Mm. I mean, there's just... They were talking about that, you know, last week in Austria. And like, it's such a short lap that, you know, you push so hard to try to find, you know, time anywhere. But it's the total opposite for a long lap because you're just trying to hang on the whole lap.
Yeah.
A great corners, great set of corners. Obviously, F1 and MotoGP, amazing. Yeah. Moto3 through there. It's flat for like the first two corners and then a slight break, which is also really cool to see because they really hit that corner like sometimes three or four abreast as well.
Yeah exactly. It translates to so many different motorsports, which is almost a secret of the best corner.
Yep,
to a degree. Number three is Assen Ramshoek. Yes. Which is the classic high speed left before the final chicane.
It's great.
It's going into the stadium section.
Yeah,
which is again, Assen, fast flowing. I'm sure you can kind of see a theme with that, but like going through that section where, you know, it's either cambered or it's not cambered, and that fast flowing left where sometimes you see like Marquez has passed a few people there, and then they're also using that corner to then line everyone else up into that last chicane into the stadium section. So again, just another track, another corner and a track that takes a whole lot of balls.
That's where Lorenzo did his collarbone, wasn't it? Or was that
before?
Just before.
Before, yeah.
Yeah.
That's when it was pissing down rain. He kind of just, I think he high sighted, was it out of the corner, one of like the small little fast kinks, and the rear just went.
Mm.
Number two, Philippines, turn three, Stoner Corner.
Stoner Corner. Classic, isn't it?
Classic. Has one of the best shots of riders from the rear, watching them light up the rear wheel going through there. You know, you've got the ocean in the background. Again, takes a whole lot of balls. And it's like amazing what Scott Redding said, because Marc Marquez takes that similar line and does a similar type of thing where he lights up the rear. And he said that Mark basically just copied all of Casey's data, just studied it, and then he could do that.
And walking the track last year, Thursday, we were privileged enough to do a track walk with all the riders. It's tighter than you think.
Yeah.
Like, it's a long radius corner, but yeah, I mean, you got that wall that's staring at you on the outside. It's amazing. And you really have to experience that. You got the water in the background and obviously that heavy braking into Honda.
And then going into Honda, that's right. That's a beautiful thing about that corner is you've got that heavy braking. So you're going flat out around that corner and then they're all hard on the brakes. And that's when, you know, we've spoken about it before. We've watched Juan Mir hard on the brakes in Moto3 and how much later he was braking than everyone else. And you just knew this guy was going to tell him.
Yeah, you knew he was MotoGP worthy. Yeah. World champion.
World champion, that's right.
Asterix. Happy birthday to Juan Mir.
Is it?
Yeah.
Number one for Listy's list is Mugello, Casanova, and Savalli.
Wow, controversial.
Yeah.
Controversial. That's your number one.
Yeah.
It's a great corner. Great set of corners. Yeah. And classic Rossi era, you know, all the fans in the background, flares. I mean, there's not much better, is there?
Not much better. And that downhill section is just for the aspect visually and for what the riders go through down there, I think they're just the best corners on the calendar right now. I don't think you can beat it.
Yeah.
Leading into Arrabbiata 1, Arrabbiata 2.
I also love turn 1, Mugello. That's a special corner for me.
Yeah, San Donato.
San Donato 1. special mentions, the right-handers, San Marino coming up. I really like those at the end of the back straight.
Yep, they're good. Going up over Lukey Heights into MG, yes. I think is beautiful. I think that's definitely a special mention.
Mm.
But I didn't want to put two Australian ones in there because we get yelled at.
We would. Yeah, I mean, it's some classic. And one corner makes the whole track. I mean, that's like you look at Laguna Seca. That's, you know, that if it, you know, Laguna Seca is a cool track, but if you didn't have the corkscrew, it would be nowhere near as famous. So.
Oh, nah. And it's built on the side of a massive hill, mountain almost. Yeah. Like, that's just what it's, you know, we've spoken about this for bikes, I guess. Because we just spoke about cars, but like for bikes, you don't want them computer generated tracks because it just doesn't really work to a degree.
Now you want a guy with a notepad and he draws the track.
Yeah,
that's where these. On the side of the hill. Phillip Island's a classic. You know, it's seriously just going like we're just going to draw a line through the through the hills there.
Mugello's the same. It's all valley.
And it's built a beautiful, beautiful racetrack.
But then, as we said with Formula One, like I think you almost have to move away from that now. And it has to be purpose built for these cars.
Yep, I agree.
Which, you know, if you told me that 3 years ago, I would have punched you in the face.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think I've just succumbed to the change now. And I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
so,
I think I'm almost the same.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It still loses it. I think then, what irks me about that is I think it just loses its touch with the common man. And I think that's what a traditional track brings.
It does. It does. But all the great traditional tracks like your Silverstone and Spa are long tracks, you know. That's what make them so interesting.
See, Shavs, I'm rolling around in a bit of a stinky car at the moment. How can you help me?
Doesn't surprise me, mate. Doesn't surprise me. James, I have the product for you, my friend. We have Motorsport Republica air fresheners. All your favourite drivers and riders.
So Marquez, Rossi, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri.
All the famous ones we have. We've also got t-shirts in stock. So if you want to go run in your Motorsport Republica t-shirt, James, you're more than welcome to.
Can I sink beers in it?
You can do anything you want with it.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
So jump on to motorsportrepublica.com.au. And guys, it supports us. It supports the pod. And we really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
But take nothing away. Zandvoort was still a really good race. And for me...
For incidents.
But yeah, it's just so hard to pass. Hopefully the new rule changes coming through will change that. But we'll see.
Hot takes, mate.
Oh, you didn't want to get... You didn't have a little bit of a preview of Barcelona at all?
Oh, yeah, shit. Sorry. I'm moving too forward.
He's pre-ejaculated again. Sorry, guys.
Standard. Seriously.
Yeah, so Barcelona coming
Barcelona,
up.
Barcelona, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so we've got a big weekend of motorsport, F1 in Monza, and then obviously MotoGP in Barcelona, which is insane. So, and we're going to be down the beach this weekend for ASB Cup.
Oh, yeah, we'll be down
Sunday.
There.
So,
anyone down Phillip Island, come say g'day.
Anyone down Phillip Island this week, come say g'day.
We'll be at the pub Saturday night.
Yeah, we will. We will. Yeah, we will. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. Looking forward to it.
100%.
But yeah, what are we thinking? Are we just thinking Marquez dominating again?
Well, he's saying he's basically not going to win it because he doesn't like Barcelona, but he's still won there a heap of times. It's not his track.
Bez for me. I'm going Bez this weekend.
Aprilia circuit.
Yeah,
it's Aprilia circuit.
Bez is going to be in my tip, I think.
Number one.
Yep.
I'll hold you to that.
Yeah,
I'll hold you to that.
I think it's going to be Aprilia track. I think Marquez will still hang on for second. But
what's your prediction on Alex Marquez?
No, he's done. He's done. Put a line through him, Jim. He's fifth or sixth, I reckon.
Yeah.
He's I think he's shown some immense talent, but at the start of the year, he had no Aprilia there to fight.
Or KTM.
Or KTM to fight. Now they've come in, and now he's really struggled with some... The issue is the last couple of Grand Prix, he's had long lap penalties, and also he's had grid penalties. So he needs to get over that, reset this weekend, hopefully have a good qualifying, and then go from there. But you've got Acosta's fast, you've got... Bastianini has been fast, and then obviously you got Jorge Martin finishing fourth. Now they're just taking his spot that he was taking. So Bagnaia's still out the back somewhere, but yeah,
it's gonna be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. Barcelona, it can always be hit and miss on the actual racing, though. I'm not sold on Barcelona anymore. I used to love it, but I think the racing, for whatever reason, the bikes just—it's had the greatest race of all time, obviously, but. Lately, even I think in Moto3 races has always been a bit of a gap.
Yeah, I think and in the last few years, it's been just dominated by a single person. I think last year was different, obviously, to the last race of the year, wasn't it?
So, Martin.
Well, did they have two races there last year? They did, didn't they? Yeah.
They must have,
yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah. So, and look, my memory escapes me, I'm not sure. I think Bagnaia crashed on the last lap, didn't he, of the sprint, and then he won the main race, so, yeah. But Bagnaia's not the Bagnaia he was last year or the year before, that's for sure.
The Ducati is definitely not the Ducati.
That's for James Shaw.
Yeah, so it's going to be it's going to be interesting. I don't know if Alex Marquez, like this is the race where it's the barometer for us if it's not raining.
Yeah, I agree. I think, maybe Europe, it's been strange this year. Every race of the last, I reckon 5 F1 or 5 MotoGP, it's threatened to rain.
Yeah.
I don't remember this in the history of It's supposed to be the hottest summer in bloody Europe this year.
Ice caps, mate. They're melting.
It's raining every single Sunday. It's crazy. It was weird with the Dutch Grand Prix because they said, oh, it's going to be rain all weekend, and it didn't rain once.
Yeah.
So
it was like Melbourne on Sunday. It was supposed to piss down rain for my run all day. It didn't rain. Just going back to it, this Barcelona MotoGP is the barometer for me where everyone's at. Take Mark out of it. Let's not talk about him. We already know.
Yeah.
But Alex Marquez, Marco Bezzecchi, Pedro Acosta, those three, this is the barometer of where those two manufacturers at, and those where those three riders are at. Because we've been to Brno, haven't been there in ages, so it's all new. We went to Hungary.
Yep.
New.
We went to Austria with the chicane.
Austria, which is, it's always chicane, a weird one. The chicane. It's been there for a couple of years. But this is like a track where they did preseason testing there, so they've already got data. This is the barometer for where everyone is at.
Mm.
And Barcelona normally doesn't rain. I don't remember the last time it's rained in fucking that Grand Prix, to be honest. So it should be.
All I picture Barcelona is just sunshine.
Like, just no, not a cloud.
Not a cloud, just blue sky. Yeah. Like, I met some people on Saturday. They just go back from Barcelona. They said it was the number one spot they went to in Europe.
Oh, there you go.
It was incredible. So,
City of Churches, like Adelaide.
Well, they got some serious churches in Barcelona, not bloody Timbuktu over there. So,
sorry to actually, Adelaide listeners haven't copped it in a while from us, Louis, so we always give them shit. We like Adelaide.
Adelaide's nice. It's like a little country town.
Yeah.
All right, jump into hot takes, Jimmy.
Hot takes. I did pre-ejaculate, unfortunately.
Yeah, standard.
Very standard. Curdy, don't look at me like that. I'll do it again.
Curdy's forgot about the heater, which has been great.
Yeah. Curdy, can you turn the heater on?
Go on.
At Jared.Madsen, can we have a moment of silence for the Sky Sports commentators?
Oh, I didn't enjoy him. Didn't enjoy. It's hard. It is always hard with...
not as good.
Without Martin Brundle there. I think... having a racer's opinion is very important. Obviously, the experience that he has. So, yeah, I think Crofty does well, but he gets a bit carried away when he's not there. Mm. So, yeah, that's what I find anyway.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. I still need the two main commentators.
Mm.
At Mitch_Kostic, Hadja will replace Tsunoda just to do the same, if not worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's the take, isn't it? I think the only good thing with Hadja going into that new team with Verstappen is a whole new car, whole new set of rules. We're starting back scratch and learning it from there. We haven't been in the same style of car for the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So I think it's a little bit different.
Consistency is definitely going to be the title of our episode because you know you can't keep swapping drivers.
Yeah. Yep.
Nothing will get built from that.
Yes.
You need consistency.
And Hadjar and Verstappen, I mean, what a lineup.
But you've already booted Lawson.
Mm.
You then boot Tsunoda.
But we know about Tsunoda, James. We've called that from the start. We've known that for years. He hasn't got it. He has not got it. He's had enough chance.
Yeah. Danby's going to come at you for that.
Oh, well. He's in 5 years, he's finished fifth once or something.
Hadjar's already got third.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
At our boy, Drayson, D Silver 87S.
He's been a bit quiet from the Queen of the South.
Yeah, I think they have like a little bit of a hum over there.
It's summer, so it's hot. Yeah, internet doesn't work and shit. They got the crab boil happening.
Yeah. hasn't paid his prepaid plan for the internet.
Yeah. When Drayson's probably like a billionaire, like oil tycoon from South Carolina. The ranch. It's got a big ranch up there.
Ranch?
Yep.
Mark Marquez still needs to win a championship on an inferior bike to earn official GOAT status.
Oh, jeez.
I had to throw one of them in there. I reckon he won a championship on an inferior bike in 2018, 2019, if I'm going to be honest.
I think
Ducati was a better
bike. They need to go and interview Bagnai and tell him that question. Because I reckon Bagnai thinks he's got an inferior
bike. That's a good answer. It's a great answer.
Yeah.
I like that. Your boy Jack_Twisty_. Casey Stoner would still beat everyone today.
Wow. We're talking about a hot take.
That's a tasty take.
I'd love to see a Legends race.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? What bikes would you put him on?
Put him on like S1000s or something. Or Panigale.
The man throws out S1000s. Why'd you pull that out of your butt?
What do you mean? BMW, it's like the most boring, stable bike they make. So
he knows.
I mean, a motorcycle. I do a motorcycle podcast for a reason, James Shaw.
Yeah, that's true.
Take it till you make it, mate.
That's right.
Yeah, so for me, that'd be awesome. I mean, Rossi, Stoner, Pedrosa, Dovizioso, like put them all on a stock bike to see what happens. Like they do with the Ducati at the end of the year. And they have the Ducati day or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And then Marquez.
Booted Bulaga. Just when you have no fucks, that's no fucks, isn't it?
I know. And all the Italians, like, it was in San Marino as well, wasn't it? They were just standing going.
And then he's going to go back this same year and then win the ninth world title at San Marino.
Turn it up.
Turn it up. Casey Stoner, look, he was an absolute generational talent. We know that, but we're never going to know the answer for that. I'd like to think so, but we'll never know the answer.
Interesting. I don't know if you're about to get to this hot take, but it just sparked my memory about Marquez coming through the era of not having all these electronics has helped him this year on the Ducati, because he's sort of might be able to go back to that grassroots sort of feel of the bike.
Well, yeah, when Marquez started racing, it was basically the start of the electronics boom.
Yeah,
with MotoGP. So like, you got to remember the early MotoGP bikes were still pretty bare bones of electronics. They really were. Like, but he. You know, I could be wrong, but I think Honda was the first to develop like the seamless gear shifter, and like all those ECUs and what they could really do with a bike. Obviously, it became controlled. It was the electronics boom, and that kind of happened in those 2010s, mid 2010s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could be onto something there, because they still were. Those bikes were a lot more raw than what they are. Like 2004. MotoGP 4-stroke was very raw. Then you kind of had like medium rare state for 2013. Repsol Honda, now they're, you know, well done.
It's like I just look at the screen of the bike, and I'm like, the more advanced the LCD screen is, the more advanced the bike is.
All the buttons on the handlebar, there's a button for everything.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, when you can squat the rear of a bike down, you know you're going pretty far.
That's what amazes me about these guys, is you've got your wheel-to-wheel battle, but you have to press and release a function on the bike every single corner. I mean, I'm not sure if it releases automatically, but I'm sure they have to do it automatically when they the rear ride height device.
Brakes, I think, releases it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Richard_Conrad, World Superbike has the potential for greater short-term investment returns / quick wins for Liberty.
Okay.
It's a hot take, because I don't know if World Superbike can really provide anything at the moment.
I'd like to elaborate on that. Obviously, we can't with the small amount of riding we can put in a hot take, but it's interesting. I think it definitely has a spot still in the world of motorsport, but I just think they have to go a different direction, and I really don't know what
that
is.
Do you reckon it does? I don't know if it does.
I don't know. I don't know if you would put it's more stock bikes, or I don't know what the and look, I don't know enough about it to realistically have that big of an opinion on it. It's not something that I've grown up watching either.
I just don't know if it does anymore. I really think people want to watch the pinnacle of something, and World Superbikes was almost the pinnacle of road racing in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. As I said, time and time again, every week we sit on this pod, I say the same thing. It's so accessible now, motorsport. Like, I can sit down, KO, Foxtel. I can watch any motorsport from anywhere around the world. And our lives are so busy already. Am I really going to spend that extra time to watch 3 superbike races, you know? It's really hard to get that raw person into the sport, you know? So,
I don't know. I wish I could tell you.
Because people started watching MotoGP or superbikes or whatever because they saw it. Oh, dad left it on the TV when I was a kid and I just started watching it. Like Tour de France. That was like me.
What about if World Superbikes went to 2/3 of every MotoGP round and followed the circuit?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would help it, but.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bikes going to that's DHL plane.
Yeah. The problem is we know the MotoGP are trying to make the grid smaller, and then talks of Moto 3 not going every round. So
that'd be I don't know. That's kind of cool.
Maybe that's debunk that theory, but yeah, I don't know. I really don't know.
Our boy Nikki D 3604. If Honda is competitive in 2027, could we see Pecco move to HRC and escape Mark's shadow?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we I mean, I keep saying that I think he needs to go. So he needs to go somewhere, try somewhere different, because he's just going to be flogging the dead horse if he's going to be Marquez's teammate by the looks of things.
Such a gamble going to any, and staying, I guess. Like, but it's a gamble going to a new manufacturer for new regs.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what they're doing. At least maybe if you're staying with Ducati, you'll have a bit of an idea of what.
But it could be a master move.
It could be. That's right. You just don't know.
Hamilton going to Mercedes in 2013. Yeah. Like, everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yep.
And he won you know, all those world championships in a row. So,
At Luki Kappa, VR46 to Honda for 2027. While slightly wild, it may give Rossi a chance to beat Marquez. I think Rossi loves to hold a grudge and will never put any of his names back on a Honda.
True. I do see VR46 going in a different direction one day, but it'd most likely be with Yamaha, you'd think.
Well,
BMW coming in. So.
You'd think Yamaha. Like, yeah. You thought that was all money, but obviously they just don't provide.
The last...
They talk about missing a trick, though. Yamaha, just all they had to do was provide a fast bike, and they had Valentino Rossi, the most marketable motorsport rider of all time, your bike.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, they said... He came out and said during the week, I was watching an interview, and he goes, the day they signed Lorenzo, and he was my teammate, and they wanted two top riders, was the day I wanted to go to Ducati, because I want to be the big dog.
You know? And I can understand the ego in that.
Yeah. Like, I've been your guy, and I've won these world championships for this long, and then you get another number one guy. Like,
that's motorsport. That's what happens. That's the reality of sport.
What was amazing about the interview was Rossi was like, I wanted to be the number one. Yeah. Like, it was so black and white. There was no gray area.
That's why he's a multiple world champion, because these guys don't care.
Yeah.
Last one. Our boy MDub93. I just personally really like this, because this really feeds into my autism. Bring back big, bold numbers on white plates, black numbers on the front and side seat tail, like the 90s.
Yeah, so I'm thinking Mick Doohan's big white.
Even Rossi, just a 46 on the front and on the sides. Oh, that's exactly what I want.
It does
back.
Look old-fashioned when they do that. Yeah. Like, it does look classic. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean,
the problem is they've got the little tiny little tail now.
Yeah.
You can't even see it. You wouldn't be able to see it, but... I am Mr. M Dub. I couldn't not agree more. It's exactly what I want.
Very good. All right, we're going to jump over to Patreon. Right,
let's go to Patreon.
Talk a bit more MotoGP, and we appreciate the listen, guys.
Look out for our Patreon. It'll be uploaded as soon as we can.
Yep, and it will be a massive week this week leading it up to MotoGP and F1. So,
see you for extra chats.
Thanks, guys.